Dr. Hill Explains, where I invite you to join the science teaching conversation with me about Robert Andrews Millikan's Episode 1, a reading from Encyclopedia, Wikipedia, on this particular physicist. So people in general won't have heard of him. He's foundational in Caltech. That's one way people hear of him. He's sort of the founding father of Caltech, or person of Caltech. And he's also important in determining the charge on an electron by using a famous oil drop experiment. And this is one of these classic experiments. If you do it yourself, which I've luckily did in my undergraduate years, it's just a worthwhile thing to do and see and understand and put away. Now, my interest in him has come up from looking at Einstein. And there's just a few questions in that he may have had sort of, racist attitudes. It's hard to know. And often you must be cautious reading through the Wikipedia. You don't always get the full impression of him. But I'm just going to read through Wikipedia. And I found that reading through Wikipedia means that you get a different viewpoint and you actually find some nooks and crannies to fold up, and you follow them up and you get a much more complex three-dimensional view of everything. So he's a physicist. He died in 53, a few years before Einstein, a bit older than Einstein. Just if I could probably have his... he got a whole heap of medicine medals, the Franklin Medals, Ostred Medical Merit, Medal for Merit, all these beautiful medals. I think also a Nobel Prize in there. He's a fairly famous physicist, but sort of lost in the history of time. So, Robert Andrews Millikan, born March 22, 1868 to December 1953, was an American experimental physicist, honored with the Nobel Prize for Physics in 1923 for the measurement of the electric particle charge, electric charge, and for his work on the photoelectric effect. Millikan graduated from Oberlin College in 1891 and obtained his doctorate in Columbia University in 1895. In 1896, he became assistant to the university at the University of Chicago, where he became full professor in 1910. In 1909, he began a series of experiments to determine the electric charge carried by a single electron. He began by measuring the course of charged water droplets in an electric field. As a result, suggested that the charge on the droplets is multiple of an elementary electric charge. The experiment was not accurate enough to be convincing. He obtained more precise results in 1910 with his famous oil drop experiment, which he repeated replaced water, which tended to evaporate too quickly, with oil. In 1914, Millikan took up with similar skill the experimental verification of the equation introduced by Albert Einstein in 1905 to describe the photoelectric effect. He used the same research to obtain a very accurate value of Planck's constant. Very interesting. So that would be the photoelectric effect. In 1931, Millikan left the University of Chicago to become director of the Norman Bridge Laboratory of Physics at the California Institute of Technology, Pasadena, California. There he undertook a major study of radiation the physicist Victor Hess had detected coming from outer space. Millikan proved that this radiation was indeed extraterrestrial origin and named it cosmic rays. The chair of his discoverer of cosmic rays, the chairman of the Executive Council of Caltech, the school's governing body at this time, in 1931, until his retirement in 1945, Millikan helped to turn the school into one of the leading research institutions in the United States. He also served on the Board of Trustees for Science Service, now known as the Society for Science and the Public, from 1921 to 1953, his death. Interesting man. Well, biography. Education. Robert Andrews Millikan was born on March 22nd, 1868, in Morrison, Illinois. Millikan went to high school at Makuta, Iowa. Millikan received a bachelor's degree in the classics at Oberlin College in 1891, and his doctorate in physics in Columbia University in 1895. He was the first to earn a PhD from the department. At the close of my sophomore year, my Greek professor asked me to teach a course in elementary physics in a preparatory department during the next year. To my reply that I did not know any physics at all, his answer was, "Anyone who can do well in my Greek can teach physics." "All right," I said, "and you will have to take the consequences, but I will try to see what I can do with it." I at once purchased Avery's Elements of Physics and spent the greater part of my summer vacation in 1889 at home trying to master the subject. I doubt I've ever taught better in my life than in my first course of physics. I was so intensely interested in keeping my knowledge ahead of that of my class that they may have caught some of my own interest and enthusiasm. Well, that's an interesting aspect to it, isn't it? And it's the idea of a physicist being interested in physics. Millikan's enthusiasm for education continued throughout his career, and he was the co-author of a popular influential series of introductory textbooks, which were ahead of their time in many ways. Compared to other books at the time, they treated the subject more in the way on which it was taught about by physicists. They included many homework problems and asked conceptual questions rather than simply requiring students to plug in the formula. That's interesting. In 1902, he married Greta Elvin Blanchard, who died in 55, and they had three sons, so she was 6 years his junior. He had three sons, Clark Blanchard, Glenn Allen, and Max Franklin. The Charge of the Electron. Starting in 1908, while a professor at the University of Chicago, Millikan worked on an allotrope experiment in which he measured the charge on the single electron. J.J. Thompson had already discovered the charge to mass ratio of an electron. However, the actual charge and mass ratios were unknown. Therefore, if one of these values were discovered, others could be easily calculated. Millikan and his then graduate students, Harvey Fletcher, used the allotrope experiment to measure the charge on an electron, as well as the electron mass and Avogadro's number, since their relation to the charge was known. So Avogadro's number is 606 billion, billion, billion. 3 billions. Billion, billion, billion. I'll have to get that right. Professor Millikan took sole credit in return for Harvey Fletcher claiming full authorship of the result in his dissertation. Strange. Millikan went on to win the Nobel Prize of Physics in 1923, in part for this work, and Fletcher kept the agreement a secret till his death. That's sad. After publication on their first result in 1910, contradictory observations by Felix Arkwright started a controversy between the two physicists. After improving his setup, Millikan published his seminal study in 1913. So just to give you an idea, you puff out these jets, and a radiation source ionizes it. An ionizing radiation source ionizes it, and you can get an electric field to lift up the drop. So that you've got the force of electron, and so QV equals F, and so you've got you've got gravity pushing it down, and so you can do it now. You can actually. You need to accurately measure the size of an oil drop. Now, these oil drops are very difficult to measure with a microscope. So what you do is you time their fall, and because there's a relationship between size and time of fall. So the time of flight is much more accurate way of doing it. The element of charge is one of the fundamental physical constants, and accurate knowledge of the value is great importance. The experiment measures the force on a tiny charge droplet suspended against gravity between two metal electrodes. Knowing the electric field, the charge on the droplet could be determined. Repeating the experiment with many droplets, Miller can show the result could be explained by integer multiples of common 1.52 × 10⁻¹⁹ coulombs. I think it's 1.602 10 to minus 19. I just have to. I don't think the number's right. 100. I think that's a bit too low. 1.592 times 10 to the minus 19 coulomb, which is the charge in a single electron. This is somewhat lower than the modern value, which is, okay, we've got here 1.602.17653. It could be with 14 × 10⁻¹ coulomb, probably due to Millikan's use of inaccurate value of the viscosity for air. So, now, why this viscosity for air is necessary is that that gives you the size of the drop. Although at the time of Millikan, it gives you the size of the drop, and so you see the rate at which it goes through the air. So if you've got more viscous air, your drops are considered lighter, or if you overestimate the viscosity of air, you get a smaller drop, and therefore so you probably overestimate it. Although at the time of Millikan's oil drop experiments, it was becoming clear that there exists such a thing as subatomic particles, but everyone was convinced experimenting with cathode rays in 1897, J.J. Thompson had discovered a negatively charged corpuscles, which he called them with a charge to mass. She called them with a charge to mass ratio of 1,840 times that of the hydrogen ion. Similar results had been found by George Fitzgerald and Walter Kaufmann. Most of them was known about electricity and magnetism, however, it could be explained on the basis of the charge as a continuous variable in much the same way that many properties of light can be explained by treating continuous waves rather than stream photons. So the electron could be a chunk. The charge could be a variable mass and a variable electric charge. So you could get more of an electron or less. It's sort of like you're measuring the density of wood. So you can have little bits of wood, a lot of wood. They'll all fly through the air at the same rate. Data selection controversy. There are some controversy over the selection of Millikan's use of results and his second experiment using the electron charge. The issue has been discussed by Alan Franklin, a former high-energy experimental and current philosopher in science at the University of Colorado. Franklin contends that Millikan's exclusion of data do not affect the final value of the charge obtained, and that Millikan's substantial cosmetic surgery reduces the statistical error. This enabled Millikan to give the charge of the electron to better than 0.5%. In fact, if Millikan had included all the data he had discarded, the error would be less than 2%. While this still would have resulted in Millikan having measured the charge of E better than anyone else at the time, the slightly higher uncertainty might have allowed more disagreement with his results within the physics community, which Millikan likely tried to avoid. David Goldston argues that Millikan's statement that all drops observed over the 60-year period we used in the paper was clarified in subsequent sentence, which specified drops upon which complete series of observations were made. Goldston attests that this is indeed the case, and the notes that 5 pages of tables separate the two sentences. This is interesting because my father did statistical work on the Mendeleev, the genetic person, and proved that even if he had a better result, the actual statistical significance would have been reduced. They knew when to stop. But this is true for taking textbooks, that your lab books become a public document. When you publish, you also commit to having your lab books as public documents. Going through the photoelectric effect. When Einstein published the seminal 1905 paper on the particle theory of light, Millikan was convinced that it had to be wrong because of the vast body of evidence had already shown that light is a wave. He undertook a decade-long experiment program to test Einstein's theory, which required building what he described a machine shop in vacuum in order to prepare very clean metal surfaces of the photoelectrode. His results, published in 1918, confirmed Einstein's prediction in every detail, but Millikan was not convinced of Einstein's interpretation, and as late as 1916 wrote, Einstein's photoelectric equation cannot, in my judgment, be looked upon at present as resisting upon any sort of satisfactory theoretical foundation, even though it actually represents very accurately the behavior of the photoelectric effect. So this is hard, and we sort of now have built. He did the lens behavior, and photoelectrode behavior, and it's just interesting to see how he's done it. And in essence, the real tragedy is that Einstein's equations are correct. His theory of how it works is incorrect. So I have to agree with him, Millikan. So this is the thing. I don't think they were necessarily good friends at this stage. In his 1950 autobiography, however, he simply declared that his work scarcely permits any other interpretation than which Einstein had originally suggested, namely the semicorpuscular or photonic theory of light itself. Since Millikan's work forms some of the basis of modern physics, particle physics, it is ironic that he was rather conservative in his opinion about the 20th century development of physics, as in the case of the photon theory. Another example is his textbook. As late as 1927 version, unambiguously states the existence of ether, and mentions Einstein's theory of relativity only as a non-committal note at the end of the caption under Einstein's portrait, stating that he, stating as the last in the list of accomplishments that he was the author of Special Relativity in 1905, General Theory of Relativity in 1914, both of which have had great success in explaining otherwise unexplained phenomena and predicting new ones. Millikan is also credited with measuring the value of Planck's constant and using the photoelectric emission graphs of various materials. Now, that is interesting. So, we know that he didn't like Einstein. There's a reason. There are reasons behind it. Later in life, there are the deeper stories about how he didn't like Einstein, besides trying to disprove him. In 1917, solar astronomer George Ellery Hale convinced Millikan to spending several months each year at the Troop College of Technology. A small academic institution in Pasadena, California. Hale wished to transform it into a major center of scientific research and education. A few years later, Troop College became the California Institute of Technology. That's what I thought. Millikan left the University of Chicago and had become the Caltech's chairman of the Executive Council, effectively president. Millikan would serve the position from 21 to 45. At Caltech's most of his scientific research studied on based on the study of cosmic rays, a term which he coined. That's interesting. Cosmic rays. Yeah. In 1930, he entered a debate with Arthur Crompton over whether cosmic rays were composed of high-energy photons, Millikan views, or charged particles, Crompton's views. So it's actually Crompton's views. Millikan thought the cosmic rays photons were birth cries of new atoms continually being created to counter entropy and prevent heat death of the universe. What? Crompton was eventually proven right by the observation of cosmic rays that are reflected by the Earth's magnetic field. So must be charged particles. Is that just... he's wacko. Well, Millikan thought cosmic rays were the birth cries of new atoms continually being created to counteract entropy and prevent the heat death of the universe. Wacko. Oh, God. Millikan was vice chairman of the National Research Council during World War I. During that time, he helped develop anti-submarine meteorological devices. He received the Chinese Order of Jade, After the war, Millikan contributed to the works of the League of Nations Committee on the Intellectual Cooperation. This is where he actually began to work with Einstein. From 1922, the replacement of George Hale to 31, with other prominent researchers, Marie Curie, Albert Einstein, Hendrik Lorentz. So Lorentz is the Dutch person. In private life, Millikan was an enthusiastic tennis player. He was married, three sons, Elvis Clark Millikan, became a prominent aerodynamic engineer. Another, Glenn, also a physicist, married the daughter Claire of George Malloroy. And because it's there, Mount Everest flame. Oh dear. Glenn was killed in a climbing accident in the Cumberland Mountains in 47. A religious man and son of a minister, in his later life, Millikan argued strongly for the contemporary relationship between Christian faith and science. He's a wacko, if you ever ask me. He dealt with this in his Terry lectures at Yale, 26-27, and published The Evolution of Science and Religion. He was a Christian theist and proponent of theistic evolution. More controversial belief was eugenics. See, I knew he was... We know that he's a bit of a Nazi. This led to the association with the Human Betterment Foundation and his praising of San Maria, California, for being the westernmost point of Nordic civilization, with a population which is twice as Anglo-Saxon as the existing New York, Chicago, or any great cities in the country. That's what I had known. I had known that he was a bit of a whack, a bit of a Nazi. I had thought that. It doesn't come really ahead on this article, but... I don't know. Just a horrible person, I thought. Westinghouse Time Capsule. In 1938, he wrote a short passage to be placed in the Westinghouse Time Capsule. At this moment, 22nd of August 1938, the principles of representative ballot governments, such as represented by the governments of Anglo-Saxon, French, Scandinavian countries, are in deadly conflict with the principle of despotism, which up to a century ago had controlled the destiny of man through theoretical and whole recorded history. If the rational, scientific, progressive principles win in the struggle with the possibility of a warless golden age ahead of mankind. If the reactionary principles of despotism triumph now and in the future history of mankind will repeat, and the sad story of war and oppression in the past. Yeah, you can look. What is he talking about? The Anglo-Saxon, French, and Scandinavian countries. Oh, God. Yes, honey? Oh. Death and Legacy. Millikan died of a heart attack in his home in San Marino, California, 53, aged 85, and was interred at the Court of Honor at the Forest Lawn Memorial Cemetery, Glendale, California. Millikan Middle School, let's read this. This is just what's named after him. So that's the end of him, but I just want to give some famous statements. The proposition of any energy evolution through the disintegration of common elements, i.e. Uranium, is, from the one point of view, a childish utopian dream, and from the other, foolish bugaboo. Yeah, I can imagine him saying it. Saying radiation, another one of Einstein's stupid ideas, is rubbish. Then here's a Christian statement to finish it off. No more earnest seekers after truth, no intellectuals more penetrating vision can be found anywhere at any time than these. And yet, every one of them has been a devout, professed follower of religion. So this is a great time now, and we all believe in God. Yeehaw! That's Millikan in one episode. Another story comes to a close. It's been a pleasure sharing this moment in time with you. May you discover truly amazing things, understand them, and tell others. Thanks for listening.